Buy yourself a cup. Tickety boo.
Here we go. Stop that. Good evening, one and all. Yes, here we are, another week, halfway through January. Seems like funny, just had New Year, isn't it? Halfway through January, and I am here with another book and a chat. Well, two of the things that I have found out since I've been living in America is the lack of seemingly knowledge of geography and history. Especially with the younger kids, their Generation Zs or whatever they are and all that stuff, they have no idea about countries or where countries are or anything like that. And history as much as well. Well, my guest today, at the age of 12, I might add, he decided to try and educate or fix, shall I say, some of the lack of knowledge about history, especially US history, your own history. I mean, you know, it's never mind the rest of the world, even your own history. And he started writing a series of books that became the US History Bites. 2016, I think the first one was published, and he's written seven since then. I've just given him another 10. Seven since then. And in doing so, he's travelled all over the country and spoken to this, that and the other. Now, he has brought out a biography, which we're going to find out about. Something, as they say on Monty Python, something completely different. But I've been to introduce him, haven't I? Because on my show today, I do, the one and only Solomon Schmidt. Hi, Solomon. How are you doing?
Good. How are you, Barry? It's nice to be here.
I am not bad. I am not bad. I have no idea where this year's disappeared to. It seems like it was only yesterday I was saying Happy New Year, and here we are almost 2 weeks into it, and I literally start losing track of days these days.
I know. I was saying the same thing to someone else today. I don't know what that is psychologically. I just have no idea. People say all the time, oh, when you get older, it feels like time goes by faster. But I'm 21 and I feel it now. So
I heard the other day, which I thought was very good. Somebody said about 2 months ago, I was talking about the same sort of thing. And somebody says that as you get older, life is like a toilet roll. The older it gets, the quicker you get through it. And I thought about that, and I thought, that's right. That's what I'm going to use from now on. Anyway, as I said, you started off, you're a history buff. You're well into history and stuff like that. And it was at the wonderful age of 12 you first started writing what became the History Bites. Was it something you just realised that you wanted to share with other children your age, perhaps at the time, the fact that there wasn't any books that were simple that a younger person could read and try and learn from? Is that how it all started?
Yes. Well, you know, I've always loved history as long as I can remember. I have a mom who was always giving me books from the time I was in her belly. She was reading to me, and I came out and I read picture books on the Statue of Liberty, the Titanic, Ronald Reagan, anything when I was younger. And I read American history encyclopedias, and I had a conversation with my father when I was 11. I was homeschooled. I wasn't into sports. And I was trying to figure out what I could pour my time and energy into. I loved making home movies with my siblings. I tried making board games. Uh-huh. And my dad said, what is it you love more than anything else in the world? And I was 11, and I said, I love U.S. history. And he said, well, what if you wrote a book for kids your age about U.S. history?
Right.
And I went to a conference around that time, an educational conference, where they were selling all sorts of different curriculum for homeschool families. And homeschooling gets a bad rap. There's a lot of there's a lot of stereotypes about homeschooling, but I can tell folks, after going to 50 different homeschool conferences in many different states, thousands and thousands of people, you get folks who are awkward once in a while, but the homeschooling community at large is just a community of wonderful, patriotic, down-to-earth, humble, kind, hardworking people. They're stupendous. But so I went to a homeschool conference when I was 11, and I scoured the table, scoured the booths to find a book like what I wanted to write, which was geared towards kids, that didn't feel like a textbook. And so U.S. History Bites, I just sat down and wrote on Microsoft Word at my home computer, and I typed out 30 of some of the most important events of American history. And I knew them all, because I knew the story of America. I knew the story of the Cuban Missile Crisis and the First Great Awakening and the Civil War. And then I fact-checked it with different resources. But I it's like 2 to 3 pages each section, pictures, vocabulary, fun facts, review questions. My family and I went down to Disney World, and there was an artist who was doing caricatures of people, and we asked him for permission to use the drawing of me he had done. We threw that in there, and I've met a lot of kids who love seeing the bobblehead of me. My mom came up with the name History Bites. People will occasionally think that the word bites is a verb. History Bites. Oh yes, it does, doesn't it? It's a noun. Bite-sized chunks of history. Yeah. And I find myself, when I'm describing the book to people, I just end up using all these different food descriptions without even trying to. It's digestible little chunks. You know, but that is the idea. And then I wrote a bunch of other books in that series, and they just followed one naturally after another. Presidents came after U.S. History Bites. And then I got a little bit off on a tangent with books I wrote on Tolkien and C.S. Lewis.
Yeah.
But I have an obsession with those authors, with Tolkien, Lewis, and J.K. Rowling. I actually write. No, you're right. I'm not sure who the audience is. Americans say Rowling, British say Rowling.
It's a global audience, so it doesn't matter.
yes. And I say, so anyway, with J.K., Tolkien, and C.S. Lewis, I have quite an obsession and a passion for their works. And on a side tangent, I run tours through the U.K., through England and Scotland in July.
Wow.
Around those three authors. It's an original itinerary I designed. You go through London, Bournemouth, Oxford, Edinburgh, and the Scottish Highlands. And, four or five-star hotels, wonderful restaurants.
What do you do in Bournemouth? I used to live just up the coast from there, near Eastbourne, Brighton, Hastings, that sort of area. So
we stay at the Hotel Miramar, right on the coastline, near Bournemouth Beach.
Yep.
It's the hotel where Tolkien would stay in his later years.
Okay.
And there's a blue plaque on the outside of the
gotta
hotel.
Gotta have the blue plaques. Yep.
Yes, that's right. And he, from a room on the, I think it was the second or third floor of that hotel, from a room in that hotel, looking out to the ocean, to the English Channel, he would sit up there and write the Silmarillion, his collection of mythological tales that preceded the Lord of the Rings.
Yep.
And then we also go to a site called Old Harry Rocks, which is chalk cliff settings. And it's just the perfect place to go and talk about how the sea inspired Tolkien and Lewis's imagination, and the whole theme of Frodo sailing into the West at the end of Lord of the Rings, and what Tolkien thought about the afterlife. And it's quite moving. And the last time when we were there in July, the sun came out at just the right time when we were at the Old Harry Rocks as I was reading one of Tolkien's quotes. So that's a side tangent, but that ties into a book I was mentioning to you a minute ago, Barry, before we got on. I'm currently working on a biography of J.K. Rowling. So I eat, sleep, breathe, and drink everything related to J.K. Rowling right now, which I need to be. My publisher has me. I'm on a tight deadline, and it's due to be released later this year. So that's exciting.
Well, one of the, I mean, you know, we've got that that you've done and you've got, but what you've just recently done is something a little bit different. You've written a biography of, now, if you look at people sort of say about famous attorneys, they say Perry Mason and that's it. You know,
yes.
It's not. There is Alan Dorshowitz, one of the most famous attorneys in American history, wasn't he?
Yes.
And you've written a biography of his called Legal Gladiator, but then you've been given a little bit of special access to him and his works, haven't you?
I was privileged to be able to communicate with him a lot for the book. We did dozens of interviews in person and virtually. We covered every single part of his life. And for people who might think he's got a lot to hide, we talked about everything related to Jeffrey Epstein, Donald Trump, O.J. Simpson, his first marriage with his ugly divorce. No topic was off limits. I asked him every question I could possibly think of. And he didn't read the manuscript before it was published. He didn't read a single word of the book.
He trusted you.
He said,
wow.
He said, publish it. And he read it for the first time. And he liked, I'm thankful to say, he liked the book. He
good.
Liked the writing style. But his issue was that he thought I quoted his enemies too much, or he was shocked by how much I quoted his enemies. One of the people who spoke to me for the book is his arch nemesis, Noam Chomsky, who's a left-wing activist, MIT professor, who is I don't mean this in any derogatory terms. He's like the high priest of the far left, young, I guess you might say, disaffected, radical leaning youth. That's not an insult. I think that's a fair description. But he and Dershowitz go back, gosh, decades and decades and decades. They've debated since the 1970s about Israel and Palestine. I found old debates of theirs that I thought had been lost. Chomsky gave me a lot of interesting anecdotes behind the scenes to their different controversies. And here's a little name dropping for you, Barry. This gives you an indication of how important Alan Dershowitz is as a person. Some of the people who took time from their extraordinarily busy schedules to talk with me are Stephen Breyer, Supreme Court Justice, Geraldo Rivera, Jamie Raskin, Mike Tyson, O.J. Simpson before he died, Woody Allen, Robert Kennedy Jr., Ted Cruz, Mike Huckabee, Elliot Spitzer, and Donald Trump, among many other people. So people can find original anecdotes and I think interesting commentary from all these folks in Legal Gladiator. And it's not a praiseworthy book in the sense of I didn't sit down with the book and say, how can I make Alan Dershowitz out to be a great person? The thing is, his life is overwhelmingly fascinating. And from a couple angles, one angle is the just purely historic angle where you look at his historic accomplishments. One of the reasons I said in the beginning that he's arguably the greatest lawyer in American history, it's not because I'm disparaging Edward Bennett Williams or F. Lee Bailey, who, by the way, Dershowitz knew both of them, worked with both of them, or Clarence Darrow, the famous Scopes Monkey trial lawyer. It's not a disparagement on them. It's just simply this. Here are some of the things Dershowitz has accomplished. As a lawyer, upwards of 300 cases, including the Mike Tyson rape appeal, the Klaus Ambulo murder trial, the O.J. Simpson case, Jeffrey Epstein's plea deal, Donald Trump's first impeachment trial. Dershowitz is the oldest person to ever argue in an impeachment trial on the floor of the Senate. That's just as a lawyer, and that's not even scratching the surface there. As a professor at Harvard, he was the youngest tenured professor in law school history, tenured at 27.
Wow.
For 50 years, 10,000 students, including Elena Kagan, Natalie Portman, Mike Pompeo, Jamie Raskin, Ted Cruz. I could go on.
Right.
As an author, he's written almost 60 books that have been sold in 2 million languages, 2 million copies in a dozen or so languages. As a speaker, he's spoken in person to a couple million people all around the world, from Iceland to Australia to South America. as an Israel defender, as a Zionist, he has known virtually every prime minister since Golda Meir to Bibi right. Netanyahu. He's been a friend of close friend of Bibi Netanyahu's for 52 years. He's been on the front lines of almost every major Israel-Palestine controversy. I mentioned the Trump impeachment case. He also worked with Bill Clinton in Bill Clinton's impeachment case, and he's been commentating on impeachments since the time of Watergate. Wow. On top of all this, as a human rights activist,
right, people
who hate Dershowitz won't want to admit this, but he's done a darn lot of impressive work on behalf of human rights. When he gave me access to his private archives at Brooklyn College, hundreds of thousands of letters, calendars, diaries, legal memos, proceedings of congressional testimony. I didn't even begin to scratch the surface of all of it, but I went there a number of times, down to Brooklyn, made separate trips just to go to the archives there. In just one case, I poured through some of the files in the Nathan Sharansky folder. And Nathan Sharansky was a human rights activist in the Soviet Union who spent 10 years in prison.
He was the one in prison. Yep.
Four of those years in solitary confinement for crimes he did not commit. I spoke with him for this book. I spoke with him face to face. Dershowitz worked for 10 years to get this man, who he had never met, wasn't a family relation, out of prison. Traveling all around the country, doing work behind the scenes in the office, writing 50-page-long legal briefs, letters, campaigns in newspapers to keep his story in front of the press. Not just things that he got attention for in the media, like interviews with Barbara Walters, but behind the scenes, grueling, hard work. And I mean, there are people that I have spoken to and people that I'm aware of, their stories from Romania under the Ceausescu dictatorship, from the former Soviet Union, even from Ethiopia and other countries. There are people, in one case, who are alive today, and in other cases, who are free from imprisonment and living happy, free lives with families in democratic countries in part because of Alan Dershowitz's work. So you take all of that put together, it's overwhelmingly impressive man. Whether or not people like him, and whether or not people like the fact that he was an associate of Jeffrey Epstein and that O.J. Simpson's defense attorney, and he's still out there arguing cases that are making points that benefit Donald Trump, whether or not people like that, overwhelmingly impressive career and an intriguing human story, because he started as a punk from Brooklyn with horrible grades and just terrible behavior at home and in the classroom, to the point where a mother in his neighborhood told her daughter, "There's a boy with no future." He went from that to one of the most successful people in the United States.
It's only when you start, you know, like you've been wonderfully doing there, go through the stuff that he's done and mention some of the people. Now, I remember him with Mike Tyson and OJ and stuff like that. And I remember seeing him, you know, on some of the news things and everything like that. But it's only when you start going through and what he's done and what he's touched. And I'd heard about the, what you said, the human rights, the one in Russia, and that. I remember that sort of vaguely at the back of my mind. But then that's just scratching the surface on what this person's done.
Yes.
No wonder. Yes. No wonder. I mean, you said, it's, you know, perhaps the greatest lawyer in American history. He certainly is. It's not just the one thing he's done. It's not just the two. It's tens, hundreds of thousands of things he's done to help people and to make this hopefully world a better place in a lot of ways. And a lot of the things that you sort of found out and mentioned and stuff like that, people wouldn't even know about.
Sure.
I mean, you know, from what you're saying, you've had Yeah, obviously you're the expert on him now. Yeah, but people wouldn't know about a lot of these things. Yeah, they see the person on the courts and they see this. They don't know about all the other stuff he's done behind the scenes. And I think it's wonderful that you've been allowed not just to bring this out, but bring it out in such a wonderful way with the access that you were given to be able to share this wonderful life with your readers.
Well, thank you, Barry. It's been such an honor, and I've been the recipient of kindness from a lot of different people, and I say that in the acknowledgments of the book that this book wouldn't have happened without the help and support of many kind people, and that's the truth. And I mean when we talk about Dershowitz, because the book is about him.
Yep.
I tried to be neutral. I tried to be objective. I tried to be unbiased. And he flattered me greatly a week ago when we were on an interview together. And he told the host that I spent 3 years with Solomon and I still don't know what his politics are. That was hugely complimentary to me, because that is maybe my number one goal, besides trying to write a good story, just a good story. Mm-hmm. One of my number one goals is try not to be biased. And it's cliche right. to talk that way, but I really do try. So but my point in saying all this was I tried to be unbiased in the book, but I like Alan as a person. Mm. He's got faults like every human being does. And I included an appendix to the book sharing some of my personal recollections and anecdotes about him. He's, you know, he's a very feisty guy, extremely quick. He's got the energy of a college age kid, and he's almost 90 years old.
Wow.
But he's, you know, he's just on one level, he's an amazing human being. And on another level, he's just Alan. And people, what I mean by that is, his kids will tell you this, and friends of his will tell you this. In private, he can be like easygoing to the point of being a pushover, mm-hmm. and somewhat mild mannered and down to earth. And he'll talk to you about whatever subject interests you. And then once in a while, it dawns on you after you spend a little bit of time with him, because he'll just talk to you like you're on his level. Oh, you know, we talk about Israel or the current situation. And then I come away from our little lunch where we were discussing Israel, and I have to remind myself, hold on, Solomon. The guy you were just talking with, when he's talking about Netanyahu and this mm-hmm. and that, he's known Netanyahu.
Exactly. He knows him. Yeah. 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 Wow.
I advised him.
Well, apart from Legal Gladiator and the fact that you know, you're working on J.K. Rowling book, have you noticed all fantasy authors just use their initials? I've noticed that not you know, with sort of one-off authors on the show and stuff like that, they all have to have just their initials anyway.
Interesting. I wonder what it is.
One of the things that, and I know, because you went there, you were there the other day when we were due to have a show, was you're working in Nepal, expanding
yes.
education. How did you get involved in that?
Oh, that's a long story, Barry.
Yeah.
The long story short is I went to Nepal in 2021 with my father to trek to Mount Everest Base Camp.
Right.
And look, I'm not trying to make myself out to be Mother Teresa here, but I went there just a plan to have an adventure and come home. And a COVID lockdown was imposed and all flights in and out of the country were banned. And
uh-huh.
so we were stuck in the capital city, Kathmandu. It's a lovely city. The people are wonderful. It's a historic city, but it is one of the poorest cities
right.
in the world. It's one
yep.
of the poorest countries in the world. And I had never seen poverty like that. And it made me want to find if there was some way to do something in a small way for the wonderful people there. And I became connected with this family up in Toronto, Meghna, Simran, and Monisha Katyal, and they're originally from India. And they were doing work during COVID, teaching kids via Zoom in remote areas of Nepal. And they were teaching them English and math. So I contributed history lessons, like history
yeah.
bites of Nepal, lessons to them that they taught to their students. And then fast forward a number of months, my father had an idea to take these lessons that we had been creating and put them into a workbook that could be distributed into areas where people don't have access to quality schooling. And I very fortunately became connected with Jane Goodall, who's a British scientist who studied chimpanzees in Africa and does a heck of a lot of humanitarian work. Also with a guy named Apa Sherpa, who's a world record holding climber. And so I'm doing work with them and their foundations and Meghna and her family to try and get this workbook out to different villages. So we'll see where that goes. I'm hoping it might, in some small way help some kids there. It's a fascinating country. It's an overwhelmingly beautiful country, but Apa says, and he's quite right, that far more beautiful than the mountains are the people there, and they're hardworking and hospitable and kind, and they're saddled with this grueling poverty,
right,
and the lack of various resources. So it's just, I'm not, they don't throw pity parties for themselves, but it's sad. So,
It's good, you know, it's good to know, Sol. I mean, I remember seeing a couple of documentaries on the BBC about people who've gone there and how happy the people are and stuff like that, yet they've got nothing.
Yes.
Is that? Anyway. Time is beating us, Solomon. So what I'm going to do now is hand the show over to you so you can tell everybody where they can find out more about you, your new book, and of course all your History Bite books and everything. So over to you.
Thanks, Barry. Folks can find Legal Gladiator and my biography of J.K. Rowling. It's called A Pen to Change the World, at my publisher's website, which is Skyhorse Publishing. History Bites books are available at historybites.com, where there's also some information and links to my YouTube channel called History Bites. But if you want to make it simple on yourself, folks can just go to my website, solomonschmidt.com. That has information on all my books and a little bit of biographical background, and quotes from some noteworthy people who have commented on my work. So that would probably be the easiest location for folks, solomonschmidt.com.
Well, Solomon, thank you so much for being a guest on the show. It has been absolutely wonderful chatting to you. Great to know all the stuff you're doing. I'm glad I managed to find out a bit about Nepal, because I did come across a little bit about that, and I was really interested in that as well. As for your Gladiator book, that just astounds me, the Legal Gladiator, what you've managed to find out and the things that we don't know about Alan and everything, and the access he gave you and that wonderful, wonderful stuff. Anyway, thank you so much, and perhaps when we finish that J.K. Rowling book, you'll come back and chat to us again.
Oh, I'd be honored. It'd be a pleasure. This was a lot of fun, Barry. I thank you for having me on. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you. Well, there you go. My guest today, Solomon Schmidt. And I'll say that last one, S-O-L-O-M-O-N, of course. But his last name is S-C-H-M-I-D-T. M-I-D-T. Talking about his History Bites book, his Legal Gladiator book, the work he does with Nepal, everything. Really, really great stuff. He's 21. 21! Crikey. I had trouble spelling my name at 21, I tell you. Anyway, that's it. I'll be back tomorrow with a fresh guest. But until then, as always, we have one thing left to say. Don't forget. Blow away.